This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. There are concerns that this summer, Lake Erie will experience the same kind of toxic algal blooms that caused Toledo's water supply to be shut off 3 years ago. Researchers monitor Lake Erie to detect cyanobacteria blooms as early as possible, but it takes time to go out, gather the samples, bring them back to the lab for analysis. The researchers are getting some faster help this year. Tim Davis is a researcher with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory. Before we talk about your new tool, remind us why we have this problem. What's causing these algal blooms?
Algal blooms are basically the visual symptom of an underlying problem, which is nutrient pollution. So both nitrogen and phosphorus entering our lakes at high concentrations and high loads are causing these events to take place. They've been happening for about 15 years, and if the status quo remains, they'll continue to happen and likely get worse as our climate changes.
Okay, so let's talk about that just a little bit, because Michigan Fertilizer Law of 1994 restricted the use of phosphorus fertilizers on residential and commercial lawns like your home or golf courses or athletic fields. Phosphorus and automatic dishwasher detergents became a thing of the past in Michigan in 2010. Where is all this phosphorus pollution coming from?
Most of it is coming from agriculture. We are very careful not to paint agriculture in an evil light, but in order to grow crops, farmers need to fertilize, which means applying phosphorus and nitrogen to their fields. Farmers have traditionally used excess phosphorus and nitrogen in order to make sure that they get the highest yield possible.
Right, called insurance applications, because it's just a little bit of cost for making sure that you have enough fertilizer in case a rain comes and washes some of it off, right?
Absolutely, but that's exactly what we're concerned about, is the precipitation. Rinsing some of those phosphorus and nutrient concentrations into the rivers, which eventually make it into Lake Erie. That's what's causing these issues. While point source pollution has largely been decreased due to the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement.
Okay, explain what point source is.
So nutrients coming in from industry, like if there's a pipe that you can go to and it's a pipe that's coming from industry or
a
sewer plant or you know, water treatment plant or a septic tank, those are point sources. They are sources that we can go back to and say, this is the problem. Non-point source pollution, like agricultural runoff, CAFOs, concentrated animal farming, those are non-point source. So it's harder to deal with those, but those are creating a bulk of the nutrients that are coming into the Western Basin and other parts of the Great Lakes as well.
Okay, so we have these algal blooms. We've seen algae. It seems harmless. Why is it leading to these toxins?
The algae that are producing these blooms, that cause these blooms, are a natural part of the community. What happens is when we get these high concentrations of nitrogen and phosphorus, they grow very quickly and end up dominating. So while they produce these compounds naturally, they're not producing these compounds to harm us. They've been around for millions and millions of years, and they're producing these compounds for millions and millions of years. They don't really care too much about whether we're here or not. When they grow in high concentrations, that's when you get a buildup of these toxins, which can lead to human health, animal health, socioeconomic impacts.
So what kind of health problems are we talking about?
The main toxin in these blooms in the Western Basin of Lake Erie is microcystin. It's a hepatotoxin, which means it impacts the liver. So at what we consider to be acute toxicity, it can essentially cause liver failure and lead to death. But chronic or low-level exposure can lead to other symptoms like vomiting, diarrhea, other gastrointestinal issues. And if you get in contact with these blooms, if you swim in them or if they get on your skin, they can cause dermatological issues like rashes.
So the consequence is fairly serious. I mean, especially if it led to death. Why are there no regulations to require farmers to use less fertilizer? Everything we've got so far has been voluntary.
These are very political issues. What you're essentially doing is telling farmers how to run their operations. And as we all know, farmers are fiercely independent. Most of these have been generational after generation farmers. They have ways of doing things. And every time we ask them to change, it costs money. We tried no-till, and that was a good step, but it wasn't the ultimate solution that we thought it would be. So how do you create a law that's fair to all people involved, as well as positively impacting the environment? That's not an easy challenge, but it's one that needs to happen.
Let's get back to your tool. This year, you'll be able to get tests back on these algal blooms faster because of what you've described as a lab in a can. What is it?
What this instrument does is it takes a sample of water, it concentrates it, it extracts all the toxins out of the water, and then it analyzes and gives us a quantitative number for the amount of toxins in the water. It is a significant increase in our ability to have a near real-time toxin monitoring network in the lake, and it's the first one to ever be used in fresh water anywhere in the world.
Okay, how much time are you saving here?
For example, the ESP will be able to run through its entire process.
What's and get ESP us stand for?
Environmental Sample Processor. Okay. This is our Labnican. So our Labnican will take in a sample of water, and it will run through its entire process in about 4 hours. For us to go out, collect a sample, drive back to the lab, filter, extract, analyze it, it can take anywhere from 24 hours to 48 hours. We are significantly increasing our turnaround time. And that's important because the more time we can give and the better quality data we can provide to water managers, whether they're water treatment plants or beach managers, that allows them to put safeguards in place.
So this Labnican is actually sitting on the bottom of Lake Erie at some place. How does it get the test results to researchers?
ESP Niagara, which is our name for our Labnican, is sitting at the bottom of Lake Erie, and it has a buoy that sits at the surface that has a modem. And what that does is it sends us back the data over a cellular network. So I'm sitting in my office, and as soon as Niagara is done sampling and running the analysis, I get an email where I can go in and check the image. We have some partners that do a little post-quality control on that image, and we can generate toxin concentration.
Now, as you mentioned, there's only one of these environmental sample processors in the Great Lakes region. Where did you place it to best monitor this problem?
Just off of Little Cedar Point, which is on the eastern side of Maumee Bay. And the reason why we put it there is because based on a study that just came out earlier this year, it was shown that the Toledo water crisis of 2014 was caused because Lake Erie's circulation, the water circulation pattern that set up in Lake Erie due to a north wind, flushed Maumee Bay and pushed it east along the Ohio coastline, and the north winds kept it concentrated on that south shore and pushed it right in front of the Toledo water intake. So we placed ESP Niagara off of the eastern point of Maumee Bay so that would intercept that water before it reached the intake so that we could generate data and get it to water managers before the bloom ever got to the intake.
So it's right in the path of the past problem. Is that single testing site enough, or are researchers still gathering samples in other places?
One sampling site is never enough. There are multiple teams, both federal from USGS as well as NOAA, academic institutions such as Bowling Green State University and University of Toledo, Ohio State University. We all have monitoring programs that are going out either on a weekly or biweekly basis to keep tabs on the bloom and the toxicity. So the ESP is a fantastic tool. It's a significant increase in our ability to monitor, but it's not the only piece of equipment we need.
How bad are the algal blooms this year?
This year, the bloom is still setting up. It's still developing right now. We haven't seen peak bloom, but it's projected to be a fairly significant bloom. We project the size of the bloom based on the amount of phosphorus runoff coming in from the western basin of Lake Erie watershed. And this year, it's projected to be on a scale of 1 to 10, anywhere between a 7 and a 9.
So is this going to threaten Toledo's water source? I mean, are we going to have the same kind of rumble we did 3 years ago?
Hopefully not. No one can predict the future. But anytime there's a bloom, there is a risk of human health impacts, whether it's from drinking water or recreation. There's always a risk. But while 2014 Toledo event was serious, and we hope will never happen again, we have to remember that over the past 15 plus years that these blooms have been occurring, there have only been a handful of events where drinking water has been impacted. So for the most part, drinking water plants have the ability to deal with the cells and the toxin before it reaches the public's tap.
So this has only been happening the last 15 years. What does this toxic algal bloom say about the overall health of Lake Erie? Why is this happening? You know, Lake Erie was declared dead in the 1960s, and everybody's been thrilled about how well it's been doing. And now you say in the last 15 years it's gotten worse?
That's right. It's what we call the re-eutrophication of Lake Erie. And that's just a fancy word for saying that Lake Erie is becoming polluted with nutrients, very much like it was back in the 70s before the Clean Water Act and the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement. So back in the 60s and 70s, as you mentioned, we saw low oxygen events. We saw harmful algal blooms, similar as we do today. So Lake Erie is an example of how laws and binational partnerships can improve the health of the system because, like you said, Lake Erie was considered dead. And by reducing point source phosphorus pollution into Lake Erie, we were able to restore the health of Lake Erie into the 1980s. But what the issue is that we declared Lake Erie clean and a lot of the monitoring programs subsided and we took our finger off the ball. Unfortunately, these non-point source pollution started to ramp up, started to increase, and then these problems kind of snuck back up on us in the mid-90s. Now we're back in the same position we were in the 70s trying to control them.
That's Tim Davis. He's with NOAA's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory. Thanks very much for talking with us about this.
Thank you, Lester. It's great to be on.